I want you to think about the last time it was a rainy day. Did you automatically reach for the umbrella at the front door before you left the house? Umbrellas protect you from the rain, of course, but according to Marion Rankin, they provide metaphoric shelter too. Marion has scoured literature from the Mahabharata to Charles Dickens for references to umbrellas, and it turns out there are many. Marion's book is Brolyology, A History of the Umbrella in Life and Literature. The question is, does Marion use umbrellas?
I do. I didn't used to. I grew up in Brisbane, where the rain can be so torrential that there's not a great deal of point in having one. Mm-hmm. But I've come through the writing and research of this book, I've come to appreciate them in a whole new way.
So what is it about this, I guess, very simple object that made you want to write a whole book about them?
It is a very simple object, and it's the fascination that they bring with them. They're very, very old. I don't think there are very many objects that can lay claim to being so old and so widely used still in really a very similar form to how they were when they were first made. It was partly a fascination with that, and it was partly a fascination with all the different meanings they've held in various different societies and cultures around the world and throughout the ages. They've occupied a huge range of meanings for different groups of people, and it was a real kind of preoccupation with how these meanings tied in with their literary meanings that kind of drove the book for me.
We'll come back to the meanings of these brollies in literature in a moment, Marion. But first, perhaps, can you give us a brief potted history of the umbrella?
Yeah, so very quickly, it originated in ancient Egypt and Assyria as a sunshade for kings, pharaohs, and then it spread throughout the world. It was a very common object thousands of years ago in China, Japan. It's played a role in many different nations of Africa. It only reached Europe and particularly Britain relatively recently, actually. So it was sort of around the 1700s that it reached the UK.
And how was it received in the UK?
It was received fairly poorly, to be quite honest, which is quite funny given the kind of indelible association between umbrellas and Britishness these days. So it was people who carried them were generally scoffed at, mocked, had things thrown at them on the streets, things like that. Yeah, they were they weren't accepted at all. It was sort of assumed that the whole purpose of rain was to make you wet. And also the objects themselves were very unwieldy at the time. Early British umbrella design wasn't anywhere near what we have today. So they were quite awkward objects, as well as being not really the dumb thing.
And I understand these were objects that were also embraced by clergymen.
Yes, indeed. And they were often used sort of to shelter mourners in churchyards and so on. So they had this association in sort of the 1700s in England with clergymen, church kind of uses, and also women. And there was this idea that if you used an umbrella, you were just a bit afraid of getting wet and you're a bit of a sissy and all of that kind of thing.
So umbrellas weren't for men?
No.
Ooh. But obviously now they are so embraced. Umbrellas did take off, and we see that in literature too. How common is the umbrella in literature when you start looking for it?
It is everywhere. It's sort of like when you learn a new word and then suddenly you read it three times in 2 days.
Yeah.
It's sort of like that. As soon as you start looking for umbrellas, they turn up nearly everywhere. My method wasn't at all scientific. I sort of just followed leads and down rabbit warrens of books that people had recommended or that I came across in my research. So I couldn't give you a concrete figure on how many there are in sort of the Western literary canon, but there's certainly a huge number. There's over 120 umbrella references in the work of Charles Dickens alone, to give you an idea.
Wow. I'm speaking to Marion Rankin, the author of Brolyology, A History of the Umbrella in Life and Literature. And I guess for me, Marion, when I think of the most distinctive umbrellas in literature, this has got to be the one.
Take a look! It's a witch.
Of course not. Witches have brooms.
advertisement, rosy cheeks and everything.
That is, of course, from the Disney production of Mary Poppins, based on the book by P.L. Travers. Who can really forget that opening scene as Mary Poppins floats into the world of the Banks children? Marion, we've been speaking about the umbrella and the role it plays. Mary Poppins uses her umbrella to fly. That's a pretty special transformation.
Isn't it? And I just, something I love about umbrellas is the way they've been put to imaginative use, not just in literature, but also in art and cinematography. It's just such a glorious visual object, and it has enormous potential in both its open and closed states to have this really dramatic visual effect.
Do you know, I actually was at the beach yesterday in Perth and I saw some children jumping off a wall holding an umbrella and trying to make themselves fly. I wonder if they'd been inspired by Mary Poppins. Now, she carries this umbrella all the time, but it's not really about the rain for her. It's not about the chance of getting wet.
No, and that's something really interesting about Mary Poppins. Obviously, the film version, Julie Andrews plays her as a very sweet, almost saccharine character, whereas in the book, she's
quite tough.
She is really tough, isn't she?
Yeah.
And she's got this streak of real vanity, and the umbrella is very much tied up in her vanity. She carries it around all the time because it looks so good and it makes her look good.
Yes, she says, how could you leave your umbrella behind if it had a parrot's head for a handle? In this case, is the umbrella a symbol of taste, of refinement?
Absolutely, and it has been very much so throughout history, particularly from the Victorian period onwards in Britain. And it began to become associated with sort of high fashion and good taste and marks of respectability. And it was very much about the quality of the umbrella you carried, what material it was covered with, how you folded it, how you rolled it up. And all sorts of magnificent things they could do with the handles and carving, you know, dogs and ducks and crocodiles and all sorts of wonderful creatures into them.
Now, Charles Dickens, you mentioned him earlier, an avid bryologist. How much did he love umbrellas?
I suspect he rather adored them. He certainly leaves behind enormous umbrella traces in his work. There are two essays he's written in particular. One's a fairly straightforward one about umbrella manufacture, and the other one is this gorgeous thing where he's talking about the identification of the self with the umbrella, and he introduces this metaphor of moving into a public building from the outside and leaving behind not just your umbrella but also your self, your better judgment, you know, your own moral compass even. And he talks about how, you know, you sometimes go to buildings where the code of behaviour is such that you sort of have to leave your entire personality at the door with your umbrella. So he introduces this really fantastic idea of the umbrella as a little bubble of selfhood and personhood, rather.
And his characters carried umbrellas as well. Can you tell me a little bit about Sarah Gamp? Now, I understand she's the nurse in the Dickens novel The Life and Adventures of Martin Chuzzlewit. Why was the umbrella important to her?
Her umbrella's particularly notable in Dickens because it was so associated with her character that the word actually entered the language as sort of a vernacular term for the umbrella.
What word was that?
A gamp.
Ah, right.
So she actually gave her name to the object. And she carried hers around everywhere, and she was an alcoholic nurse. She didn't really look after her patients at all. She was just there for the free food and booze and a chair to snooze in while she kept up pretense of sort of looking after her patients. And for her, the umbrella was, I think there's a quote somewhere where he says it was displayed as an object of great ostentation. It was sort of obviously quite an expensive object at the time because the manufacture was very lengthy and costly. And obviously that's something that she'd really invested a lot into. But it's so closely associated with her behaviour as a person. It's constantly getting into people's way, kind of terrorising passengers on a coach or nearly choking a man to death on the banks of the Thames. So yeah, it's a wonderful instance of a fictional character being very closely identified with the umbrella that they carry.
And I guess in that circumstance, the umbrella is almost a symbol of class as well. Now, Robert Louis Stevenson, he wrote of the umbrella, its possession implies a certain comfortable provision of fortune. How did the umbrella denote class in the 19th century?
Well, as I mentioned before, with the sort of the coverings, they came into it a lot. So if you had a silk umbrella, obviously that meant that you were of very high social standing. The masses had to content themselves with sort of llama or Peruvian sheep, as one umbrella maker called it. The whalebone was obviously very expensive as well and in high demand. So, yeah, just owning one at a certain point in time was a very, very class-related symbol. And then also there was this process of democratization which occurred with the umbrella once sort of manufacturing techniques had been refined and they began making the frames out of steel rather than whalebone. So there was this kind of wonderful umbrella dissemination that happened throughout the classes, which enabled most people to carry one without, you know, too much enormous financial outlay.
Marion Rankin, there's a lovely short story by Roald Dahl called The Umbrella Man, a story of an older gentleman who trades his fancy umbrella for a taxi fare home. Maybe. It's a really fun little story. What's the significance of the umbrella in that story?
I'm going to try and not give away the ending to the story and my answer here. But so basically what happens is a mother and her daughter are walking along the road in London and it starts pouring with rain. And this man comes up to them and says, "Oh, I'm terribly sorry, but I've not got the money for a cab fare and I need to get home." And the girl's mother is sort of, you know, quite standoffish with him because she sees him as begging. But he offers her, in exchange for the cab fare, a really, really gorgeous and expensive silk umbrella. And what that umbrella does is that it impresses the woman so much that she's kind of her natural reticence is worn down and she's so impressed by the quality of this man's umbrella that she thinks, oh, he must be very rich. He must be a real gentleman. And only a real gentleman would dare to offer a £20 silk umbrella in exchange for a £1 taxi fare. So it really breaks down her defences and then, you know, further developments unfold and the umbrella and the umbrella man are not quite as they seem.
It's a quick read. I recommend that one. So we've seen there that umbrellas can signify class, they can signify gender. But you also talk about this idea, Marion Rankin, of umbrellas providing metaphoric protection. Now, another umbrella that springs to mind for me when you talk about that is the umbrella in The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe by C.S. Lewis. Can you talk to me briefly about that umbrella and what it does?
There were dimensions in umbrella history of, as you say, protection of both gods and kings. Their symbolic meaning could imply that you're being sheltered by religion or by your sovereign. And bringing that dimension to bear on a number of literary acts of sheltering is a really fascinating insight. In the case of The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe, the sort of main character, Lucy, encounters a fawn in a snowy wood and he has an umbrella and some shopping.
Mr. Tumnus.
Yes, my first guinea pig was called that. and he shelters her from the snow, invites her round to his place, and then they have this really lovely meal together and a conversation. And partway through, he breaks down in tears, and it turns out that he was going to turn her in to the evil witch who's ruling the country. And then he decides that he won't do that because he realises that she's lovely and he doesn't want to do that. And he takes her back to the land of Wardrobe, where she comes from, and he shelters her on the way back. And just the kind of bookending of these two umbrella scenes at the start and the finish of their meal, the first time when he's actually being quite deceptive, and then the second time they're racing along in the dark trying not to talk too loudly because there might be spies. And you sort of see the contrast between this sort of duplicitous act of sheltering and then the real genuine one that happens afterwards.
Marion Rankin, I don't think I'll ever think about umbrellas the same way again. Thanks so much for taking the time to share these insights with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Marion Rankin's book is Brolyology, A History of the Umbrella in Life and Literature. It's published by Melville House.